But he didn't let me. I tried to say, no, you need to let me call my lawyer. You need to let me call my lawyer. I'm staying. And he was like, you're not doing any of that. Like, you're kicked out. He literally said, if you remain here, you will be trespassing.
Dear Jane, Scott, and Marcy. Marcy, how are you?
I'm good.
Would you go to prison for something you believe in? Okay, first, I'm glad that you're pausing because I think too many people say, sure, I would. Yeah. Would you? I think that's a really hard question to answer.
It is. I have thought about this before, living in Colorado, doing pro-life work. Colorado just keeps getting crazier and crazier. And so I actually have thought about it a lot. And thankfully it hasn't come down to that, but it's scary to think about, if I'm being honest.
Right. No, I don't think personally I would have the courage to, I think, as I think about the question. Now I do delineate something very, very important though. For my faith, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But anything less than that? I mean, basically, because you think of it this way. Okay, think of your life. Think of what you like in your life and, you know, all the stuff you can do, people, whatever. And if your choice was you got to find a new job, let's say, and or you go to prison, that's your choice? Just take a new job.
Yeah.
And you can avoid prison. Wow, I don't know. We are going to talk to somebody who has gone to prison for what he believes, and it's really interesting to think about if you're that courageous. I don't know that I would have the same courage as Herb Garrity.
Yeah, I'm standing right now, but metaphorically, I was on the edge of my seat during this conversation. Because I just was struck by his courage, his emotional and mental fortitude, his outlook on it all. It doesn't seem like it's impacted his positivity or optimism or tenacity to be involved in pro-life, and that's so inspiring to me.
And here's something else that'll give people cognitive dissonance about that term.
That's good.
How about an atheist convict, saying things that convict to Christians.
Yeah.
That's part of today's episode as well. So it's really good. Herb Garrity with Secular Pro-Life joins us today on Dear Jane. Fresh from the news headlines, Herb Garrity joins us. You probably have seen him if you follow any kind of pro-life news whatsoever. You have seen Herb's name in the news. Herb, I feel like I should welcome you back to life? I don't know. That's kind
of... I was alive in there, but...
that's a good point. You weren't dead or anything, but... you're out of prison. President Trump pardoned you. So before we talk about how you got out, let's talk about how you ended up in prison. Tell us a little bit of that story for people who may not be familiar.
Sure, yeah. So in October of 2020, I participated in a rescue at a late-term abortion clinic in Washington, D.C. at the Washington Surgery Center operated by Cesare Santangelo. That place in particular all abortionists are killers, right? But that place in particular is just a house of horrors. I mean, they specialize in post-viability, late-term elective abortion. They advertise that on their website. And so this is somewhere that even pro-choice people, if they know what's going on in that clinic, they don't agree with it. And so what myself and some of my co-defendants were doing was reviving some of the strategies that were used before I was in the pro-life movement back in the 80s and 90s of physically interposing in a nonviolent, peaceful way between the killer and the victim. And so what that means is showing up to the clinic, either placing yourself in front of the door and making it so that people cannot pass by without committing violence against you, essentially, or entering the clinic and doing a nonviolent sit-in protest. And the reason that people do that, it isn't just, for symbolic protest, right? Like, I'm in support of symbolic protest. I've participated in them. I think the civil rights movement used them to great success, and I am very inspired by that. And so it's both that, right? There's a symbolic protest on behalf of the unborn, but also in a very practical way, every minute that a pro-life rescuer is sitting inside that clinic or sitting outside the door, they are not killing babies in there. And so a lot of pro-life work, which is great, which I support, is about saving lives sort of in the abstract. It's about passing laws and about creating a social safety net that helps women. And I am in complete support of all of that. But really what we're talking about there are potential lives being saved because of a reduce in the abortion rate. At a rescue, what we're doing is saving individual lives on an individual day in an individual place who were scheduled to die. And so that's what we were doing. We were doing a nonviolent sit-in. Everyone involved was sort of playing a different role. Some people were doing the nonviolent sit-in. Some people were outside. Really, I was outside most of the time, the actual abortion clinic, advocating to the mothers going in, offering them resources, providing them with whatever support they need to consider choosing life. And so some people were doing that. Some people were praying inside. Some people were chaining themselves to the clinic furniture to make it so that the rescuers could be in there for longer with the goal of shutting down the clinic for the entire day. So then we all got arrested, right? You're not allowed to do that. So most of my co-defendants got arrested that day. And then nothing really happened for a couple of years. Like, we were like, oh, I guess we got away with it, right? But we did not get away with it because 2 years later, they put a indictment out that charged people with the freedom to access clinic entrances along with a federal conspiracy statute. And I thought I got away with it because I was not charged. And then a couple of weeks later, a couple of months later, I was then charged under a superseding indictment. So I was added to that and was facing up to 11 years in federal prison for this kind of nonviolent. I don't want to call it free speech because we recognize that it's civil disobedience. There are consequences to civil disobedience. That's the point of it. So it's not just free speech, but it's certainly nonviolent speech-based activity that, because of the FACE Act and the Biden administration's weaponization of the Department of Justice, people who participated in what in any other context would be trespassing or even aggravated trespassing, something like that, which would be a local or state level issue, was elevated with this, I think, frankly, absurd law, the FACE Act, to hypercriminalize a particular type of speech based on the message.
You know, it's kind of crazy as I was reading news headlines and stories about all of this, a couple things stood out to me. One, that the clinic you guys were protesting at is probably in violation of many laws, certainly laws in place to protect infants who are born alive after abortions. And yet you guys were the ones that were arrested and prosecuted, even though these heinous acts are committed every day. And then the other thing that struck me as I was, again, kind of reading the headlines is the Department of Justice and all these other agencies and departments just kept talking about, you know, you guys were impeding the reproductive rights of women. And I thought, like, I wish I could rewrite this article and correct it for them. Like,
I think that all the time.
Flip it and it shows which side is really being violent. You know, it's just as shocking to me that we're at this place in our history that you guys are the ones being arrested and charged and thrown in prison for protesting what should cause every abortion clinic in the U.S. to be shut down.
Precisely. But I'm not necessarily surprised by that. Like, as someone who has committed my entire life, my career, to nonviolence, to educating about nonviolence, to promoting nonviolence, to then be accused of committing violence because of the actions we took that day, it kind of like hurts my heart. Like, I'm like, no, I didn't. There's video available on the internet and in Discovery that shows our conduct 100% of the time. The only violence that was committed that day, other than the abortions that occurred after we were arrested, was from the clinic workers themselves beating up on pro-life grandmas, on myself with a broom handle. And at no point were we pushing back? Were we doing anything other than being a mostly silent witness for the unborn? And so it's disappointing, but it's also not surprising, because when you look at the history of social justice movements, this happens. People who participate in nonviolent civil disobedience, they're called radicals, they're called violent, and then 30 years later, when the culture catches up, they say, oh, they were right, I've supported them all along. And so I'm hopeful that that's how history is going to look at us, with the lens of truth of the humanity of the unborn. And hopefully, you know, we'll look at those articles out there with a more realistic lens.
You know, lots of questions we want to ask, but I just got to pause right here. It strikes me, you don't seem bitter at all. Mad and angry. I don't think I'd be like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think no, I probably am a little bitter. I didn't like it, right? I think that if I think about it, maybe I'm a little bitter. But really,
I don't encourage you to be bitter. Yeah, but no, I'm just you just strike me as, like, you know, level headed and like, yeah, you know.
Yeah, but I guess the thing that I always come back to is I do think that it was an injustice the way that we were charged. Like, again, it was nonviolent civil disobedience. I think if we got arrested and charged with trespassing, I wouldn't be, you know, calling for pardons. I would have been like, that's what we did. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I'm completely in support of civil disobedience on behalf of a just cause. But in this case, I think I was a little bitter, especially when I was initially charged, because the way that they charged us, hitting us with that conspiracy statute, which was making us risk up to 11 years in prison. My co-defendant, Lauren Handy, she was sentenced to over 5 years. And that's just not understandable. I think most even pro-abortion people, if they have any respect for free speech or the history of protest in this country, they're not... They don't think that the conduct that we participated in justifies 5 years in federal prison. It's just not realistic. So I think I was a little bitter when I was first charged. Like, I would have got it. Like, if you just charged me with the FACE Act, like, sure. But ultimately, no. Because the whole time I was there, it locked up. I don't think it helps to be bitter, right? And I think that ultimately, I don't like the framing of a lot of, like, pro-life media or conservative media when they talk about us, and they kind of frame us as victims. Like, I think it was unjust. I think it was bad. But I never want to lose sight of who the actual victims are, and that's the unborn babies. Like I said earlier, like, no, I was alive in there, and those unborn babies aren't, right? Like, I was very uncomfortable in prison. It was a tough environment. Like, I don't want to underestimate that. It was bad. I did not have a good time, obviously, but my arms and legs were not ripped off of my body. I wasn't suffocated. I wasn't dismembered. I wasn't poisoned with digoxin. I am still living. I lost about a year and a half of my life to this, but these babies lose their entire lives, right? So it doesn't, if I'm bitter about anything, I'm bitter about the lives that we weren't able to save.
Man, you're more mature than I am. I mean, that just, you're a pro. That's just to hear you talk, that's amazing, dude. That's very, very good for you. That's good stuff. So what was prison like?
It was tough. And you know, honestly, I've only been out for like a couple of weeks now. I'm almost 2 months. And so I haven't processed it at all. I'm probably traumatized and I just don't realize it yet. But I'm doing all right. but yeah, I mean, it was difficult. I don't want to talk too much about it again, cause I am still processing it, but I don't want to tell other people's, stories. But yeah, I mean, I had a lot of moments in there. I think it definitely challenged some assumptions I might have about other people who have committed crimes, including violent crimes, that when you get to know people just as people, that's what they are, right? And I think that a lot of us can judge people for having a criminal record, but then when, you know, I'm sick and I'm begging the COs to let me talk to the doctor at the jail and the doctor's not there and I have to put in slips for it every day over the course of a week because I feel so ill. I think I had the flu, might have been COVID. I don't know because they never saw me to give me a test. But anyway, I'm doing that And the people who are comforting me, I know, are in there for severe violent crimes against other people. Mm. And they're sharing their illegal cough drops that they smuggled in. And they're, you know, comforting me and they're being kind. And I just think that there was a lot of moments in there that I am grateful for, you know, when we're pro-life, it's because we're pro-human, we're pro-people. But I think even, you know, the most pro-life among us, people who are compassionate, it's easy for us to still make assumptions about other people and to, you know, just forget that these babies we are fighting for, we don't get to control who they grow up to be, right? Like, there certainly are people who are incarcerated or who are formerly incarcerated who have done really, really bad things. And they were human beings when they were unborn children, and they are human beings now, and they continue to deserve respect and fair treatment. And that's not what happens to a lot of people in both jails and prisons in this country.
That's such a powerful perspective. I feel convicted listening to you talk. Just I had never thought about that perspective before, about just the other people in prison and how we think about them as well. If people did read stories about all of this, they may have remembered your name, because you initially, I think, wanted to not accept President Trump's pardon. Can you talk to us about why that was and kind of what happened there?
Yeah, I tried to. They kicked me out of prison, literally. I was ripped out of my cell in the middle of the night. And they said, you're leaving. And I had already talked to my lawyer about this potential, because Trump did promise to pardon us like a year or more ago on the campaign trail. And I am a Trump skeptic. So I was like, that would be nice. Sure. Yeah, he's going to do that. Like, I was not confident that he was going to keep that promise. And certainly, I believe he said, on day one, I'm pardoning them. And then day one passed, and day two passed, and day three. And I was like, okay, I'm sticking here. But I did talk to my lawyer about it, because what we had been planning to do for a long time was to challenge this unjust law in court under the grounds that it's unconstitutional. And the reasoning for that is kind of like what I said earlier. It is this law that hyper-criminalizes a particular type of message based on the message, right? Like, that's not in line with the First Amendment. And there has been an argument in the past, this has gone to the Supreme Court before, the argument was that, well, abortion is a constitutional right, and the federal government has the authority to regulate that and to ensure that people have access to that. However, with the Dobbs decision, it's clear now that abortion is not and was never a constitutional right. And so, does it make sense for the federal government to legislate what should be local trespassing laws? I think no. And so I think we have a strong case, if we can get this in front of the appellate courts and eventually the Supreme Court, if we have to, that the FACE Act itself, I almost want to say the FACE Act on its face, is unconstitutional. And so that was my goal. That's what I have been planning to do for a long time. But if I got pardoned, that would make that very difficult. The government would be able to argue that, well, because you're not seeking immediate relief from something we're doing, then you don't have standing. Like, people who follow the Supreme Court, like, they've heard these words and have been frustrated by them in the past. And so I was worried about that. I didn't want to risk the possibility of losing this opportunity to take on the FACE Act head first. And so I was willing to, if I had to, stay in prison for as long as they held me there in order to bring it to the court. For me, they couldn't have kept me longer than November of this year. That was my release date. And I think likely I could have gotten out earlier or qualified for a halfway house. And so it's not like I was going to do a whole 11 years, but I was willing to stay in longer than I had to with a pardon. And so when they pulled me out of my jail cell and said, you're going home, I said, no, I'm staying. You need to let me talk to my lawyer. I need to talk to him. We got to deal with this. My understanding was that I could reject the pardon, that I could say, no, I'm not accepting this. I'm staying. And the CO just was trying his best, just had no understanding of what I was trying to do. Like, he was like, You know, everyone in here wants to leave. Like, what are you doing? And I was like, I got a whole thing going. Like, I don't need to explain my 5-year legal strategy to this cop right now.
They don't have a protocol for people who want to stay in prison.
Exactly. Yeah, this was like the first time that he had to have this conversation with anyone. But he didn't let me. I tried to say, no, you need to let me call my lawyer. You need to let me call my lawyer. I'm staying. He was like, you're not doing any of that. Like, you're kicked out. He literally said, if you remain here, you will be trespassing. And I was like, well, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to trespass myself into prison and not in an abortion clinic. That doesn't make any sense. And so, thankfully I was going to, they were going to just put me on a bus back to Pittsburgh, which is where my previous address was, but like I didn't have the keys to get in, but I would have just been at a bus station in Pittsburgh. And so I was very lucky that my sister happens to live in Philadelphia. I was housed in FDC Philadelphia, and so I was able to call her in the middle of the night, like, I'm not getting on this bus, you need to come get me, I know you have work tomorrow. At this point it's like 1 a.m and I was like, you need to come get me. She's like, what? Like, what? You're from prison? And she did, she showed up, and I was free. That happened to be the night before the March for Life, and so I was able to attend the March for Life. That was kind of my first stop. I swung by my house to get some stuff, and then I was at the March for Life the next day. Not what I had planned. I planned to still be in prison right now, and so definitely it's been a whirlwind, and I've, again, not processed it, not adjusted, just still kind of going forward.
So then the pardon basically brings it all to a close. There's, you can't appeal or anything like that. It just ends the whole deal.
So not exactly. It makes it a much more uphill battle, basically. And so we are still moving forward. My attorney has made that clear with the courts that they're going forward. Most of my co-defendants, their charges have actually been dropped already, which is great. So when you're pardoned, you're still it's complicated. You're still a felon, but you're a pardoned felon. So you get most of your rights back, but not necessarily all of them. It's not really important, but the point is that when you are pardoned, there's some precedent that you can still bring a case forward, but it makes it a lot harder. Mm-hmm. So last I heard from my lawyer, it's still on track. We're still potentially going to be able to appeal this, but it looks a little less likely. That said, though, someone else is going to do it again. It's going to get charged again, and we're going to have another opportunity to bring this to the Supreme Court if we have to. Ideally, we won't, though, because we've seen from many members of Congress who are sympathetic to the pro-life cause and to free speech, a call to repeal the FACE Act. That would be ideal, that no one has to suffer this again, because that's really what I was thinking, that I don't want, you know, if maybe Trump's not going to charge as aggressively as the Biden administration, if people do this kind of conduct, but who knows who's going to be president in 4 years from now. And I don't want it to just flip flop back and forth, people facing years and years and years in federal prison for nonviolent free speech. And so it would be great if Congress could just get on board with repealing it so that I don't need to worry about taking it through the appeals process.
Tell us about what you're doing now. Now that you're out, I hear you have a new role at Secular Pro-Life. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so again, I planned on being in prison right now. So I got out and I was like, I gotta pay rent. Like, what am I gonna do? And so I was at the March for Life, which was like, great networking opportunity, I guess, because I ran into Monica Snyder there, and I told her that, like, yeah, no, I have no plans for what I'm about to do. And we just kind of had a very informal conversation about what Secular Pro-Life needs and what kind of role I could fill. And so that was really fortuitous. I just happened to run into her, and they were looking to fill or create really a role that I think I would really excel in. And so, yeah, I have just, like, literally last week taken a job, started working for Secular Pro-Life, who I have admired the entire time I've been pro-life. Literally, I think I became pro-life when I was in high school, like adolescent, and I'm not religious myself. And so I remember literally Google searching, like, can you be an atheist and pro-life? And the first thing that popped up was Secular Pro-Life's blog. I clicked on that and I was like, oh, good, I can. I guess I will. And so I've admired Secular Pro-Life forever, specifically Kelsey Hazard, Monica Snyder, Teresa Bukovnak, the board of Secular Pro-Life are like, if you ask me any time in the last 10 years, like, who are your pro-life heroes? They all make the list. And so I'm excited now that, like, they're my bosses. So, yeah, I am taking on this role, and we're kind of making it up as we go. I had no time to support raise or anything because, again, I planned on being in prison. So we're just kind of taking it slow and figuring out what it's going to be. But basically, I'm the comms director. So everything other than social media, outward facing, is me. So I'm going to be doing a lot of events. I'm going to be participating in protests. I'm going to be doing speaking engagements, which I've done forever. And so now I'm excited to do them on behalf of Secular Pro-Life. I'm going to do media. I'm doing a podcast right now. I'm ideally going to speak to traditional media, all with the idea that I want as many eyeballs on the already good work that Secular Pro-Life is doing as possible. Because I believe that so much of the abortion debate, just showing, hey, this is a person like you. They're secular, or they're non-traditional in some other way. They're liberal, they're progressive, they're LGBT. They're something like you, I think, has, for me, shown to be so effective, not at changing someone's mind immediately, but at getting them to rethink the abortion issue. When you're able to just say, well, you believe that because you're an old, straight, conservative, Catholic, white, Christian man. It's easy to do that. And I think a lot of us do that with a lot of things. Like, I know conservatives who see a blue-haired person and make a whole bunch of assumptions about what she believes. And so I think that just being at a protest with a sign that says secular pro-life changes the narrative in a way that I think is significant. And I think that I'm really excited to get to play a role in that along with Monica. I'm pretty excited about this new job. It was not my plan, but it has worked out beautifully for me so far.
Yeah, Monica's a friend of the show. We've had her on a few times, and I just actually had Teresa on a couple weeks ago. And I agree with you 100%. I mean, you know, Marcy and I are both people of faith, but we'd love having non-traditional pro-life people, so you can't pigeonhole us to say, well, you only feel that way because of your religion. No, there's lots of different reasons to be pro-life beyond that. So anyway, I love that. I want to ask you about, you've made a strong case, and you have reminded us the impact of civil disobedience, how it was impactful in the civil rights movement. It really was. Do we need to do more of that as a movement, or what do you think moving forward is the role of civil disobedience? Should Marcy and I do something crazy and get thrown in jail, or what are your thoughts as far as that goes?
Yeah, let's talk after this. I mean, ultimately, I don't ever want to tell anyone what to do, what risks to take. Certainly on behalf of the 501c3 Secular Pro-Life, I will never tell anyone to do anything other than peaceful sidewalk advocacy, which is a great way to be involved. But ultimately, I do think that everyone should ask themselves what they can be doing to stop abortion, to both end abortion in the long term and to prevent abortions in the short term. And I think for different people, that is going to be different answers. I don't think that everyone is in a place in their life where they can participate in nonviolent civil disobedience. I know a lot of people who don't even feel like, especially in the non-traditional pro-life spaces, they don't even feel like they can share their pro-life position on social media because they'll lose their job if they work in a liberal industry. Like, there are lots of ways to be pro-life, and I'm not going to tell someone, you need to do this. This is the only way to be pro-life or to make a change. But I do think, myself included, almost all of us could be doing more to prevent abortion. And I think that if you are someone who feels called to nonviolent civil disobedience, do the research, look into the effects it's had, not just for the civil rights movement, not just for the anti-abortion movement in the 80s and 90s, but for almost every successful human rights and social justice movement. I mean, the suffragist movement, every movement has had people demonstrate the seriousness of this issue by being willing to take sacrifice. And I think that's what it's going to take. And so for you, that sacrifice might be every Saturday or every Thursday and Saturday or as many times as you can being outside the abortion clinic, doing peaceful, totally legal sidewalk advocacy. For you, it might be trolling on Reddit and sharing on pregnancy forums when people say they're considering abortion. Hey, do you know about these resources in your area? For some people, it's going to protest, I think, especially for non-traditional pro-life pro-life people. That's what I'm trying to do, bring them out of the shadows. Because I know so many people who tell me that, like, I'm pro-life, I love the work that you do, but I can't be pro-life in my social circles. And I think that's horrible. Like, I have felt that way in the past, too. And I don't think anyone should. And so what I want to do is build a movement of people where we can be friends with each other. If other liberals don't want to be your friend, if other gay people don't want to be your friend, if other non-Christians don't want to be your friend, we'll be your friend. We can be a movement. Certainly, I also believe that you can be friends with people who disagree with you, but often for pro-lifers, that they're not the ones making that making that call, cutting off a friendship. Yeah. I do think that nonviolent civil disobedience, from a personal perspective, I think that should play a role in the abolition of abortion. But I also don't think that you should hear that and be like, well, then I don't have a role to play because I gotta take care of my kids, or I have a disabled family member who I am the sole caretaker for. Like, I would never tell that person, you need to go to prison, otherwise you don't actually believe that abortion is bad. Like, obviously, people need to discern for themselves where they want to be in life or where they are in life and where they can best use their talents and their passions on behalf of human rights.
Yeah, I think we're 100% on board as far as, you know, having non-traditional pro-life people, you know, if it's secular pro-life, if it's, you know, whatever group it is, to see that, hey, it's okay. You don't have to be in alignment with this whole litany of things. We're all about saving babies, right? If we agree on that, man, here's if this avenue works for you, if it's secular pro-life, let's go. I mean, I think we share that goal with you. So that's fantastic.
Exactly. And a big part of what we do at Secular Pro-Life is building interfaith coalitions. You know, if someone comes to me and they're like, I am a far right conservative Catholic, I don't want to do anything that you're doing. I don't like this at all. I'm like, oh, great. Go organize in your community. Like, maybe we can't work together on everything, and I'm okay with that. But you can go, and we can give you the resources to help in your community if you want them. If someone comes to me and they feel at home with Democrats for Life, you know, I'm not necessarily a Democrat for Life. I want to funnel them there and say, here are your people. Get involved. I don't want anyone to feel like, and I think everyone in the pro-life movement should feel this way, right? That, like, I have the only way to end abortion, and so you need to do it. I think that certain people are just going to have a different comfort level working on different projects and different things. And I just want people to be doing something. Like, I am so against pro-life infighting, like debates over if this tactic is more effective. This is because the vast majority of people, even people who believe that abortion is murder, you know, if you ask them in the Pew poll, they say, I'm pro-life. The vast majority of people do nothing to end abortion. And so if anyone, even if I think their style is not cool, even if I'm like, oh, I would never hold a sign that says that. I would never organize in the way you do. Oh, I don't like how that center is run. That's not my business. I'm going to do my work my way because I think it's the most effective and how I am suited to fill that role. But if someone else is doing something different, I'm just grateful they're doing something. And that's what I want to tell people. Like, anything that you are, you can be pro-life. Anything that you can do, you can probably do in support of the pro-life movement. And so get involved. If that's what secular pro-life, I'm going to funnel you into one of the projects we have. If you're like, ooh, that's not my style, I love Jesus, I'm going to say, I love that. You can still work with us if you want, but let me find your local church's pro-life ministry and get you plugged into that. I just want people to be doing something. And people who are doing something, I want you to be doing more. Yeah. And myself included, I need to be doing more too.
You're certainly an inspiration to me and to all of us, I think, anyone who gets to hear your story. I think what that last thing you said is so important, because The reality is we all have a realm of influence, whether that's a huge social media platform and we have tons of followers, or whether it's your next door neighbor or your friend group. And I love how Monica talks about, like, why should you be the one that feels awkward if everybody around you is sharing a pro-abortion opinion? Like, you should still voice your pro-life beliefs and get people to think, because most people have not thought about it. So I love the approach she takes, but the reality is all of us have opportunity to impact and influence people within our sphere of influence, no matter how big or small that is. And I also think people may not realize all of the different opportunities there are to be involved in the pro-life movement. I know when I was first getting started, I thought the only way was to picket outside of abortion clinics. And then I started looking into it, and it's like, oh my gosh, there's so many different ways to be involved in life-saving activity. So I'd encourage people to take to heart what you shared and get involved, whether that's in their community or in their online spaces or at a national organization or whatever it is. So, Herb, thanks so much for being with us today. Tell people where they can follow you or follow your work, and maybe even support your work.
Yeah. So, I am just at Herb Garrity on Twitter, actually X now. I was like in prison when I became X, I think. So it's still Twitter to me, but, just at Herb Garrity, you'll find me, everywhere else. And also on Twitter, you can follow at Secular Pro Life. Very easy to find. They, I think, actually are making some of the best pro-life content out there. And I would have said that before I worked for them, specifically on TikTok. I think that they were some of the first people, along with the Equal Rights Institute, to really use TikTok effectively to get people thinking about abortion in a space that they weren't before, and that certainly is not friendly to pro-life beliefs. So follow Secular Pro-Life everywhere, all the social medias you can find at Secular Pro-Life. Yeah, and like I said, I did not have time to support raise for this position. I just jumped in head first. So if you have the ability to donate, that would be much appreciated. You can find that just on our website, secularprolife.org/donate. Monthly donors make it possible. If you would consider that, you'd be my favorite person. You'll get a thank you card. But any amount always helps. Upcoming, like, I'm already planning events and they cost money. So if you like the work that we do and you want to support us and support me in this role, I'd appreciate it. secularprolife.org/donate. Thank you for letting me plug that.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us today. Thanks for sharing your story. I hope it inspires a lot of people. I think it will. And hopefully, because of your story and because of your speaking and your involvement, more people will get plugged into the movement. So thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks again for listening to Dear Jane.
You can follow along every day on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and X. And make sure you also are subscribed so you never miss an episode on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, as well as YouTube. Ring that bell so you're notified and you never miss an episode.